One of the things that we all wonder about, and at times here in this country, as you all know, we get obsessed about, is Olympic hockey. I know this is one of the dossiers that you have on your desk. Can you give us an update on where the league is at with the Olympics?
So it's something that's being worked on actively, at least with respect to our group at the league office and the Players Association. We've had dialogue with the International Ice Hockey Federation on it, and they in turn have had discussions with the IOC. It happens to be the case that the IOC is fully occupied these days on making plans for Tokyo this summer, the Summer Olympics yep. coming up, and hasn't really had an opportunity to this point to focus on kind of the hockey tournament issues around Beijing, and in particular kind of revisit some of the items we talked about with them actually a year ago, February. So it would have been February of 20. So I think it's just a matter of time. Obviously, you know, we have to make some decisions in the relatively near term, but there's nothing that's facing us in terms of a deadline overnight. So we got some time to continue to work through that.
Excellent.
Bill, congratulations on the ESPN TV deal. And what does this deal mean for the National Hockey League with regards to growth and revenue over the long-term period? And when can we expect to see the second part of the deal to be announced?
So both good questions. First of all, thank you. We're obviously excited and very pleased to be back with ESPN. We're really thrilled with what we've heard in terms of what we've heard personally. Just in terms of the excitement in ESPN and Bristol about having us back. Certainly we think it'll help continue, you know, the trend of growing the sport. They've agreed to a nice rights fee that will be in excess, obviously, of what we've been doing in the past. We still have a half package and a lot of valuable assets that are kind of on the market now. I don't have a specific timetable for you in terms of when we'll have an announcement on that, but hopefully it's in the relatively near term. And I'd be remiss if I didn't say, you know, we're very, very pleased with NBC and all they've done for our game over the last 10 years in terms of growing its profile, particularly in the United States. And they've been a terrific partner, and it'd be great if they continue to be partners.
Bill, thanks for joining us. I'm just seeing today that Madison Square Garden is going to allow fans at some point once they show their records of vaccination, which leads me to believe there's a scenario that come June where we are selling out arenas full of vaccinated people. Is there a potential future where a Stanley Cup final is somewhere where you can't sell out a building because of local guidelines and you move it somewhere so you can have a sellout? What are we looking at in terms of fans' vaccinations in the future for the league?
You know what, I think that's yet to be determined, like so many other things involved in the pandemic. With vaccinations coming online and coming online rapidly, we're going to have to evaluate what that means, vis-a-vis players, what that means vis-a-vis fans, and the like. We are updating our spectator capacity guidelines currently. It does not take into account necessarily vaccination, but I think most of the changes you'll see, the significant changes that you'll see in terms of where we are this year, won't really be effectuated or implemented until next season. No doubt will be further changes as we go forward this year, but you know, we're past the halfway mark. We move into a situation where we start the playoffs in early May, hopefully, knock on wood. I'm not sure you're going to see huge changes this year in terms of what you've seen to this point, other than I think that things will continue to improve, get better, environments will get better, you know, but I don't think we'll be back to where we were, obviously, pre-pandemic.
With NHL Deputy Commissioner Bill Daly on Hockey Central, the women's game, the NWHL has their final this weekend in Boston. The PWHPA has, you know, partnerships, and we've seen games with the Rangers at Madison Square Garden, Chicago. It's a partnership with the Maple Leafs, one recently announced with the St. Louis Blues. Where is the league at right now vis-a-vis the women's game, Bill?
Well, in some respects, it's evolved. That position's evolved over time. In some respects, it remains the same. I mean, we're very, very supportive of the women's game. We're supportive of it being played at an elite level, the highest level. But we also understand that, you know, to some extent, women's hockey at its elite level is somewhat fractured, continues to be somewhat fractured. And you know, that's a situation that I'm sure will remedy itself with time. But in terms of our position is let it remedy itself, and then we can evaluate what that means and how we move forward. I think it's fairly consistent with the position, big picture, that we've had for a number of years now.
Mm-hmm. The All-Canadian division has been a hit with fans with respects to viewership and all that. Is there any way that we see this All-Canadian division go beyond this season?
The commissioner, it seems to be a very frequent question that we field, and in particular the commissioners fielded. I'll try to be consistent with his approach in dealing with it. Obviously, we want to get back to our regular alignment, and we want to do that as soon as we can possibly do that. That there's obviously some fun we've had this year and some novelty associated with the realignment, but we don't view it as kind of a long-term phenomenon. We don't think it's necessarily in the best interests of the league to have it long-term. I think when we can correct, when circumstances and regulations and the law allow us to correct, we'll be correcting.
Bill, given the quarantine situation and the border situation between Canada and the U.S., are you guys kind of making plans for, like, say, six of seven Canadian teams right now about, you know, postseason, where those teams would reside if they had to move to the U.S. come the conference finals? Or how is that process working out on the league side?
So ultimately, that would be a club process. If in fact it's impossible for us to conduct the playoff cross border, we are making preparations to see if we can get some type of consideration for allowing a U.S. club to come in for various games, either in the conference final round or the final round, if that were to be necessary. Don't know what the answer to that is yet. Don't think we'll know the answer to that for quite some time. But in the event that that's not a possibility, then obviously the other alternatives would need to be explored. I don't think they'll be too difficult to iron out. We would have to deal with that as the reality, you know, we've had to deal with and adjust to a lot of different curveballs that have been thrown at us over the last 14 months. And, you know, I would view that to be another one, but everything's solvable.
Bill, you're generous with your time, but before we let you go, I want to ask you about the draft, and it's going to go as scheduled 23rd, 24th, in July. What was some of the thinking behind deciding to leave it in July? How many different ideas were proposed? I mean, I heard things like maybe just do the first round in July and then 2 through 7 at another date so scouts can see, you know, deeper into the field. Can you walk us through the thought process behind leaving it as is?
Well, I think the primary thought process of leaving it where as is was kind of the issues that would have needed to be resolved from a players association perspective proved to be too significant to justify kind of a deferral. Would have cost our clubs a lot of rights vis-a-vis draftees, and I totally get it on the other side of the table in terms of what they have to solve for and the issues they have to deal with in terms of representing prospects. But that at the end of the day, when you went through all of the issues and all the concessions that would have needed to be made from a league club perspective in terms of a draft deferral, the juice wasn't worth the squeeze, for lack of a better term. In terms of the options considered, sure, there were a lot of different ideas, different ways we had approached potentially solving the issue, and the hardships involved with both, both on the player side in terms of kind of losing to a large extent for a large number of players a year of elite development, but also on the club side, not being able to scout in a typical way, even where they're playing hockey, for the most part, scouts weren't allowed in the building. So, yep. it's going to be different. But again, it's the same, it's kind of the same tune. We've been dealing with different, and different doesn't always mean, it's a tragedy or a disaster. Different just means it's going to be different. And, that's what we'll deal with this year.
And we'll leave on this. As we, saw the conversation around changes to the NHL draft lottery, our first thought here was that's the Berkey effect. Are we on base or off base? Was the big driver behind changing the lottery Brian Burke?
I would have to say no. We love Berkey and we respect his views. I can tell you that I don't think they had a large impact on what we ultimately were doing with the draft lottery.